picked up a little bit of garbage, including some of their lunch trash, because they were having a break and they were sitting together in the garage. And I picked up a couple pieces as I was walking back out towards the dumpster. And I could hear the guy, the foreman, saying to the rest of the crew, "I don't like seeing Bill pick up our trash." He's like, "Don't ever let me see you guys leave trash around when Bill's around."
Mm.
And I just thought to myself, like, man, if this is really what they're thinking, like, if that could happen over and over again on every job, the halo effect of this cleanliness element and what it means on a job site.
This is The Rise Leader, the podcast dedicated to empowering today's leaders to create lasting impact. Each episode delivers insights, strategies, and inspiration from top professionals and visionary thinkers designed for those leading teams on the front lines and from the executive suite. Discover actionable tools and inspiring stories to elevate your leadership journey. Step up, make a difference, and join the Rise Leader community.
Today's episode is sponsored by Learning Edge, your source for energy-efficient building education. Our guest today is none other than Mr. Bill Washburn. Bill is a 30-plus year industry leader, and I'm very fortunate to say that we've tracked along the same industry together for all those 30-plus years. He has a vast amount of experience as both a frontline leader, which we both share, a senior level leader in organizations that have spanned across residential construction, commercial construction, most recently build for rent. And Bill has been a business owner, started up his own company, been a part of startups at home building organizations, and helped wind down and transition companies in the Great Recession era. Bill has been a part of transforming organizations. He's been an adjunct professor at ASU. When we worked together at a home builder, Bill was a very unique role that we call contractor relationships manager. So maybe we'll get a chance to unpack some of those stories today. And then most recently, my partner here at Rise Leadership. So welcome, Bill.
Thank you, Jeff. Glad to be here.
Absolutely. Bill, I'd like to just start off with, first of all, if there's anything that I missed from that vast amount of experience, you can certainly weigh in. But I'd really like to just talk about your career path and how that has shaped really your leadership style over the years.
Sure. I think a big part, I started as a contractor. That's how I met the first builder that hired me. They were one of my accounts. I was supplying fixtures and when needed. The industry's changed, but back then we just supplied for the most part. And then along the middle of the road, went to work for another contractor, vertically integrating many services, which has become more and more popular as the industry's evolved. And then most recently, working for a large contractor that touches about 70% of the market here in Arizona, and then many of the markets across the Sun Belt. That contractor element is a big deal to me, always has been. I think that's what led to the contractor relationship management job together.
Mm-hmm.
And those elements matter in our business. And I think oftentimes builders might, you know, they just like, well, I've got the money, I've got the risk, just low price.
Right.
But dovetailing all of those contractors together with the right builders always makes a difference.
Right. So I'm assuming that through that diversity of experience that you've had, that's probably gleaned you a lot of useful tools that you've been able to build on over the years.
I think the biggest thing for me was an eye-opening experience of walking through one of the contractors is Avanti Windows. I don't know, is that okay if I'm putting a plug out there, but they had a handful of buildings to accomplish what the builder demand was in their manufacturing, their distribution, their installation, which is all components of their business, and walking through and recognizing that, wait, they're fueling every vehicle every night to make sure that they're ready for delivery the next day. They're doing the maintenance if needed. I mean, it's hot outside. Guys need to have AC or new tires, whatever's going on. All of this is like turnkey deal. Oh, and they're scheduling every product to match the framing that's being done on the house.
Right.
They're matching the codes required by the jurisdictions that are involved. All of these things, and the builder says, hey, lower prices or whatever, you know, like right. It's just a swing of a magic wand.
Right.
Not recognizing that all of these things roll up, you know.
There's a lot of things behind the scenes, right? Yeah. Well, maybe in some ways and maybe not so much in others, right? Yeah. So I think it might also help just give the audience a little context for your story, because our community is both frontline leaders and mid-level leaders all the way up to senior level executives. And clearly you've had experience through those. Can you talk a little bit about your early experience as a frontline leader? Because I know you started out on, you know, running work out on job sites. Sure. And can you just talk a little bit about that and what maybe some of your key takeaways were from your early career?
Yeah. For me, I'm the new guy. I'm young because I was given the opportunity at a young age that I was super grateful for. We were coming out of a small recession in the late 80s,
right,
early 90s when I started, and had this opportunity working with these old guys that all controlled it. And so I had to somehow usurp that to get the attention of the trade.
Right.
So for me, a job ready was key. And then as soon as I could demonstrate over and over again, let's just say, for example, I'll just use the foundation guy. Well, he's got to have, you know, some pins so he can identify the property. He's got to have a level clean pad. I mean, it's just these basics, but I would do that. And the more that I would do that, I'd get the control of the trade. I could say, hey, I need you this date or that. And that started to get demonstrated. And so for me, job ready was a big deal. That was the early days. And to the extent that it led to the next, you know, the transition, I wasn't looking for a job, but a national builder approached me about coming to do a startup for him.
Right.
And that was because of the trades.
Right.
They're like, oh, Bill knows what he's doing.
Love that. So I know one of the things that we've gotten feedback from many of our students in Rise Leadership, and you sort of alluded to it there in your story about being, you know, early on the job, which is, you know, either being young or being new, right? And you end up out there on job sites and you have this, you know, to me, what always felt like the weight of the world on my shoulders, right? As a, you know, the person who was trying to run the job. And it can be difficult, right? Like when, and I was both young, and even though I'd been in the construction industry as a hands-on trade, as a house painter, it was my first time really in a position of leadership and responsibility. And, you know, my story is being that pimply face, you know, 21-year-old kid right out of the military and ended up on a job site. So can you talk a little bit about, you know, some of the, you mentioned it a little bit there about what I was considering, like gaining the respect of the trades by being job ready. Anything else that you might want to share with maybe a young leader out there for, you know, job site supervision to, you know, help move the needle in their own personal leadership?
In our business, you've got to be open. The communication is a gigantic, there's a gap. We have language and cultures that can create a significant gap. So learning to listen and understand, this is what will help with the level of learning, like your learning curve. If you're listening and you're asking them sincerely, like what it is that they need, that'll help bridge the gap. But then beyond that is, how do you communicate? And some of the guys, a lot of people in our industry, they may have a record, like a legal record that defers them from getting into school or going into other professional levels. And so they're out there in the field and they look intimidating at times,
right?
You know, and so as a young person and you're on charge, I found though that if you listen, like the ego's not in the way and you're willing to understand before you start to direct, those things make a big difference. And right. You'll start to literally be like friends, and you don't have to worry about the guy covered from top tattoos,
sure,
head to toe. You can go live in the hood with the rest of them and
right.
Enjoy.
Sure.
If that was required.
Got it. All right. Well, let's jump into today's main topic, which is, I've referred to it as expectations leadership, mainly because that is the style that I've coined for my own leadership style. And this is really born out of, and again, it goes back to those early days of running work on the job, but more specifically, when I got to be a more senior level leader, is really where this dawned on me. And the reason I came up with the term expectations leadership was I really just didn't enjoy conflict. And that's what I saw so much of on the job site. And it, you know, conflict is going to happen. And it's also, you know, at times necessary. And so I realized that, but I really wanted to go out of my way to set crystal clear expectations for and with whoever I was working with. And I think it works best when you communicate your expectations and you get, first of all, you could call it buy-in or agreement, right, from the other individual. And you get really crystal clear about what is the desired outcome. And that can be an individual thing in the home that you're negotiating to get resolved, or it can be how frequently a superintendent is from a contractor might visit the job site to make sure that they're doing their part. So I really want to unpack expectations leadership a little bit with you. Any initial thoughts on that?
Well, it's what's brought us, I think, together in a lot of ways. Because, I mean, not necessarily using those very terms, but if I'm taking construction documents at the beginning and I'm working it through all elements, I wanted to do what made sense. I didn't have the ability, like I, you know, pushing guys around and the trying to leverage that, especially as a new guy.
Right.
So if I could understand what those expectations were from the builder standpoint, the new superintendent on the job or assistant superintendent, there's a budget, there's a schedule, and then there's plans, you know, these things all drive the job. Well, if I could get that alignment of those things and understand them clearly and convey that, I didn't have problems.
Right.
And it's already paid for. So now I just got to hold it, rein it within.
Love that.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there's three main elements that I want to unpack on expectations leadership. And number one is vision. So I personally believe that sharing, and again, this can be at the frontline level leader or an executive level leadership, but really sharing the vision. So really articulating like where we're trying to go as a community or where we're trying to go as an organization is so vital to the overall mission. You and I worked in an organization together where we ran a very elegant one-page strategic plan, right? So it had a number of elements that we're going to cover here today, but setting the expectation through a shared vision, I think, is really number one. So I just wanted to ask, like, either a story or an anecdote about where you've either seen that work well, or we can either unpack, you know, maybe experiences that we've had where there's not that. And I don't think we have to go any further than, you know, like the students that we have at Rise Leadership today. We talk about those scenarios in our coursework and we hear those examples of where there's not clear vision from ownership, from the builder to the contractor, things of that nature. So any thoughts on that?
I guess there's a lot of stories. I was fortunate to work for someone early on where the transparency was there. And our homeowner guide, so this is the person paying for the home to be built. It covered all the things related to the house. Well, that became the onboarding of the individuals that we hired. So that expectation literally from like, if we're telling the homeowner that this is the rules, then we're going to live by it. And to me, that it was what it was transparency.
Sure.
It just was throughput all the way. And now with technology being what it is, I can fly a drone over a job site and you can tell exactly where everything's at. Mm. And if there's a way then to evolve that and share that with the contractors so that they can just open it up and go, good, you know, they would save money ultimately. But transparency and being able to do some of this stuff, leveraging the technology, I think's an avenue to definitely pursue.
Yeah, I love that example. And that, if so, correct me if I'm wrong, but what you said was you actually use like your customer experience manual to guide and demonstrate your onboarding process for new team members.
Yes.
Right. So I think that's a great example. It's going to hit on probably at least two or maybe three of the things, including the vision, which we've already talked about. And then this might just be a great segue into communication, right? So I really believe on a personal level, whether it be communicating with, you know, close personal relationships in your life, how well we and how effectively we communicate is really one of the keys to success. And so I wanted to ask you a little bit, the other thing that we do in our Rise Leadership was we're mainly focused on the construction element, but there are, let's call them relationships that are upstream, whether that would be the relationship with your sales team, for example, or the purchasing team, right? So it's right. The folks that are selling homes to the folks that we might build, or the ones that hire the contractors to be on our job. And then there's the downstream relationships, right? Which typically warranty, right? After construction. And then let's, oh, by the way, not forget about the customer, right? Who is a very key element in the process, but just communication in general. Any other thoughts on effective communication, both up and downstream, that could be helpful to the community?
If you were to kind of consider it like a gigantic spoked wheel, you've got, you know, if you are the hub of whatever it is you want to do, there is a spoke to accounting and a spoke to finance and an account, a spoke to land development,
right,
to engineers, consultants, on and on and on around that whole thing. So these avenues and expertise, it demands a lot.
Right.
And so to be an effective hub, you've got to be open to like a little bit of every spoke, the jack of all trades, master of none.
So the couple of things I wanted to hit specifically on communication, and it dovetails in with vision, which we've already discussed, and maybe I'll speak a little bit more senior leadership right now, but it doesn't have to be specific to senior leadership, which is being really clear on either what your own personal core values are or what the core values are of an organization. And so being really clear on core values, and then the other is core competencies, right? So what are the things that we want to be good at around here? And again, this can work in your own personal life. This can work if you're a frontline leader, even if you don't have core values established as an organization, and you want to establish them for yourself as a leader of an individual community or an individual leader of several crews, if you're a superintendent for a contractor, then you can establish these for yourself. But core competencies are, what do we want to be good at around here? And not just the typical things, if you're a craftsman, about being good at your craft, but communication, which we were in the heart of right now, is an important part, you know. Core values like integrity, like we're always going to be honest and we're going to be fair with people. Everybody gets to decide for themselves what they want their individual values to be or competencies. And the fun part is when you're working in sophisticated organizations, you decide what these are going to be as a team. Yeah. So I think the core values, core competencies, and the last one is core purpose. And again, I'm assuming that might have been baked into that experience model that you referred to before, but deciding who you want to be, right, on purpose, as a purpose, right? Like, I'm assuming that when you were running work on the job, or when you were running your own business, for example, you had an idea about who you wanted to be, and that helped you live or operate in that manner.
That's right. If there's something, I guess, that drives me today and has every day of my career, it's been, it's not that it hasn't evolved, but it's always doing, like, and being, how do I say it, to be better. I mean, I'm doing this analysis is constantly happening, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to, I screwed up and I got a guy there on the wrong date. Well, why did that happen? So I do this analysis, this mental analysis all day long. I think there's a ton of benefit if individuals, whether they're a trade or a builder or an executive or even low level, I mean, everybody's processing and doing that. You know, it's the guy that's drilling holes through the studs to pull Romex wire for the wire, the electrical. I mean, rather than doing a hole here and a hole here and a hole here, so his wire goes up and down like that, maybe it's more effective if I could just go straight through like that. What you figure it out, and then you get these efficiencies.
Right.
And if some way, then that's clearly conveyed to the owners. Oh, then that's conveyed to the guys. Like in the organization where you and I worked, that was something that mattered. And when it goes full circle that way, oh my gosh, it's so exciting, because now the salespeople, they're talking about, like, yeah, this is why we don't do that. You know, we do it like this, and you make a negative a positive.
Right.
You know, it's my classic, I tell the students all the time, it's like, this one wall is like no other wall. It's, I mean, it's custom. The artisans applied it by hand.
Love that.
Yeah.
Well crafted. All right. Well, I'm going to move into my third thing that I want to cover, which this is a little bit of a, I don't want to call it a tricky subject, but it's accountability, right? And the reason I guess I'm kind of dancing around and calling it tricky is because we see this through leadership. We see this through what occurs on job sites, and or we even see it occur internally at organizations. When you don't have a healthy accountability system or the skill set to be able to manage and hold folks accountable, or contractors accountable, fill in the blanks, mm-hmm. then that's usually where we see a lot of inefficiency, right, on the job site, all the way to organizations that don't make it, where they're not successful. So where I wanted to go with accountability first was taking personal accountability. And that's a big thing that I've always sort of focused on, especially with safety on the job site, taking personal accountability. And the reason I mention that is my number one tool, and we'll recap on this when we talk about actionable tools here at the end of the conversation, but Greg Anderson, from his great book, Safety 24/7, had one of the most impactful leadership principles that I've ever heard. And the way he said it was, demonstrate personally what you want more of, right? Which means it's that whole thing about, you know, walking the walk.
Yeah.
Not just talking the talk. So anyway, I wanted to see if you had any thoughts on accountability in general.
I was walking through a framed home, and I had the habit of just picking up trash as I moved along from house to house. We were doing our job as a builder, and we had dumpsters at each house. Mm-hmm. So it was easy. I could carry a little bit, throw it in the dumpster, and then I go walk the next house. I know Portuguese, but I don't know Spanish really well, but enough to understand what this crew said as I was walking out the door, having picked up a little bit of garbage, including some of their lunch trash, because they were having a break and they were sitting together in the garage, as you typically see. And I picked up a couple pieces as I was walking back out towards the dumpster. And I could hear the guy, the foreman, saying to the rest of the crew, it's like, I don't like seeing Bill pick up our trash. He's like, don't ever let me see you guys leave trash around when Bill's around.
Mm.
And I just thought to myself, like, this is really what they're thinking? Like, if that could happen over and over again on every job, the halo effect of this cleanliness element and what it means on a job site, it just, so walking the talk,
sure,
it can start at that level,
right?
And I mean, I know with you in safety, you know, like, dress the part, you know, look the part,
right?
Yeah.
Look the part as a leader,
right?
Doesn't matter if you're a foreman on the crew or a superintendent. We've also seen this from builder to builder around town, where just stay on the vein of safety. Some exhibit the standard and some don't. And to me, that sends a very clear message to the rest of the team, whoever that team might be, contractors or individual workers, around what we will accept or tolerate.
When you have leaders at the top that not just do it, but embrace it. And to me, the embracing in that respect, like looking the part, dressing the part, they show up to a job site with a vest on and a hard hat. They look the part.
Right.
You know, totally. And that to me is impressive.
Totally. So the next thing I want to talk about is what Jim Collins would have said, you know, from good to great fame, the right team. Right. So he called it having the right team on the bus and in the right seats. And again, not an easy thing to do in this current environment. It seemingly through my entire career, maybe short of the Great Recession, finding, hiring, and keeping really quality people seems to have always been a challenge. And as a matter of fact, it's a really good call to action to make it really one of the fundamental things that we do in business, is make sure that we're always attracting and hiring the top talent that we can. And that doesn't always mean well-educated or well-experienced. And in some cases, that's even a benefit, as long as you have an effective system to train folks, right, within your organization. So obviously you've had probably opportunities within your own business and as a senior level leader within the businesses that you've worked to hire and attract people. Any thoughts on that process in general?
I think it does demand the open mind. There is a fit. And I felt like when I read those words from Jim Collins long ago when he wrote the book, and I continue to believe the same. I mean, I think it's evident in some of the organizations that we can see swirling around us in today's economy that people, that's how it goes, not necessarily, you know, the credentials.
Sure.
Maybe that helps, like narrowing down the stack of resumes and identifying something to some degree. But I think it comes down to that, and then how you ultimately treat them.
Right.
And that seems to be, as I mean, my evolution is changing. The crowd is getting younger. The dynamics are different.
Like, right.
If they're not treated right, they don't have any loyalty. Those things are, you know, the working at GM for a lifetime or some, or
that
know,
doesn't exist anymore.
No. You call yourself a unicorn, and you are. I mean, right. You're in an industry where you were able to do that. It doesn't work that way. And so I think being able to make sure that they know there's value and being able to, the one-page plan works in this kind of scenario because that shows the transparency from top to bottom.
Right.
Identifying then, like, what are all the rules? How is it all made up in terms of the transparency? Like, if you've got clear documents and you've got clear process, those things all kind of pull together. I mean, ultimately, you have to be able to sell it, and you've got to be able to have satisfied customers to continue to sell it. Well, if everything else is in alignment, and it doesn't go very far, to get that alignment, you've got to have a trade that's on board with it.
Right.
And there's successful builders that are doing it all day long, very efficiently in terms of their budget and timing.
Right.
And that's because of those relationships.
So the last thing I wanted to do on right people was now, again, tie it all the way back to the very beginning and vision. So when we were talking about vision, I was talking about core values and competencies and the purpose of the organization. I think it's vital. And so I want to just say this for not only frontline leaders and especially executive leaders who are setting the tone for an organization, that you have your core values and core competencies clearly outlined, because at the end of the day, when I say hiring the right people, well, how do you know that you are hiring the right people unless you're hiring the type of, and we've hit a lot on performance here, but unless you're hiring the type of people who have the values and then therefore the behaviors that you'd want to be alive in your organization.
Yeah.
And so for me, it's imperative in the hiring and then ultimately the interview and ultimately the hiring and onboarding process that you are hiring for behavior as well as performance. Because just to be quite frank, I found it a lot more effective to hire, you know, again, maybe somebody without the skill set or experience and train them as long as they had the good core values,
yeah.
Right? And that's as basic as showing up on time and showing up every day if you're a frontline leader managing workers. Now that's a little bit more prevalent the higher that you get in organizations or in corporations, but not mutually exclusive. But the ability to have the integrity and the work ethic that any job that you're hiring for, right, requires, a lot of it comes down to those core values for me.
I mean, I don't know if you don't have the right behavior to get the job done, what's the point?
Right. And then the last thing that I want to hit on just under accountability is, and again, this is through my coaching work with individual organizations, is it still shocks me, Bill. And I know you've probably got a lot of experience and seen both good and bad at this part of the equation. But when I see organizations that don't even have articulated job descriptions for the roles within their organization, and this now is a direct tie back to expectations leadership, where if you don't even have a job description, a well-articulated, like, what does it mean, X's and O's, performance, and also behavior to be good at your role and what the expectations of the actual job are, how can you hire well for that? And then what's as important or more, really as important, is how do you coach to that performance day to day, week to week, year over year? How can you articulate to somebody what a growth path can look like either within your organization or for them personally or both?
Yeah, it could be easily forgotten. What you just described, because I've been a part of enough startups to recognize that you wear every hat when it's a startup. You've got everybody has to just do whatever it takes to get it done.
Right.
Right. Because you got to be lean. It's a startup. Well, unfortunately, what ends up happening is that guy, you start to grow and expand that operation. If you don't pay attention to those dynamics, you'll miss it. And so I think that the best place I've ever been where they've been, it was where we did exactly that. We articulated an idea that we were going to be doing X number of units 1 year to the next. And the roles would evolve accordingly. And it was like a tree as it branched out, but it wasn't unknown.
Mm.
It was planned and known. And so I think all the things that you talk about, you coach, it articulates and dovetails together perfectly in that way. Yeah.
So let's talk about some of the actionable tools that I just want to make sure we're recapping here for the community. Because again, our conversations and the things that we talk about are meant to be put into action, right? I love the John Maxwell, you know, leadership is a verb, right? Of course, being a leader is a noun. That's something that you are, or something that you get titled,
yeah,
or something that you create for yourself. But leadership is action, right? So I want to make sure that the community has things that they can take away from our conversation today that they could go out there and put in action today, next week, next year, to move the needle forward on their organization. So number one for me is creating that clear vision. So if you don't have a mission or vision for your organization, or again, go back to the frontline leader, you can create one for your teams, even if your organization doesn't have one. And then, oh, by the way, share that up the hill to your boss, and maybe it's something that they could just adopt for the whole organization. So setting clear vision. Number two is effective communication, right? So again, that's a lot of what we do here at Rise Leadership. We're focusing on the communication style. We're focusing on specific things that leaders can do out there on job sites to be more effective communicators by building relationships with their team, building relationships with whoever their customer might be. And then, of course, always clear expectations, which again is a topic of today. So again, either as an individual, if you don't have those, or what we normally find with our students is they're at some level in their communications journey, but it doesn't matter wherever you get to, there's always another there where you could be better, right?
Yep, absolutely.
As a better listener, more clearly articulating your thoughts, holding people accountable. Public speaking is a great example, right? Standing in front of a group and sharing what your message is. So it's vision, communication. The last is team accountability, right? And so just reflecting on our conversation today, if you don't have a written job description for the folks that are reporting up through you, wow, when would today be a great time to start that?
Yep.
Right? And create a foundation for where you can continue to build on. So it's, for me, it's vision, communication, and accountability, just to carry through that theme. So a couple of closing questions for you, Bill. First of all, who's the most impactful leader in your life or career, and how so?
Well, for a long time, I've often talked about Mark. He helped me immensely just to have the vision, all things included, and encapsulating and bringing it all together. It was just effective in how, I mean, we were extremely successful as a business. And I believe it was because of that transparency and that vision.
Yeah.
And a lot of things were changing in the world around us. And so that has left a gigantic impact. But I mean, more recently, and I'm not saying this because we're sitting together, except that we're sitting together. And for me and to be co-founders together, I mean, Jeff, like, you made a gigantic impact previously. And then I think for everybody, extending some trust that when that, it's like gratitude, it's like smiles or love. I mean, those things grow,
mm-hmm.
right?
Love
and
that.
So, yeah, that to me, so there's a level of that I think I want to extend to you. Yeah, you've made a nice impact in my life.
Well, thank you, Bill.
For sure.
I really appreciate that. Last question for you. What is the best actionable leadership lesson and or best practice that you've learned, again, in either your life or business? That
there's a lot of things that I could say, but I think I'll sum it up with one that everybody can take away today in the community, and that would be just express gratitude to like one contractor or one individual on your team today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, make a phone call. It's a great season, right? We've got the holidays that we're in the midst of, but then let that continue. Like, don't be that like, oh yeah, I did it for the
every Thanksgiving.
No, just do it. Like, it doesn't take a lot of time, but I think it does grow. And people recognize that you're grateful for their service.
Absolutely. Beautiful tip. So expressing gratitude for the good things in your life. And sometimes it can be the small things. Sometimes it can be the big things. Be grateful for all of it. And what you're hearing Bill say is express that gratitude. And with that, I'd like to express my own level of gratitude for you, Bill, for being on the podcast here today. Thank you so much for sharing your stories and your insights. I think that's powerful for our community. And I'd like to thank the community in general for tuning into the podcast today. And please don't forget to subscribe to the Rise Leader podcast. Like our episode, share it if you filled in absolutely. If you're up for it, please leave us a review.
That's it for this episode of The Rise Leader. Thanks for joining us today. To connect further, visit riseleadershipaz.com, where you can find show notes, resources, and more episodes. You can also find The Rise Leader on Spotify, Apple Podcast, and YouTube. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review the show. Your feedback helps us reach more leaders and continue to deliver valuable content. Until next time, remember to step up, make a difference, and lead with impact. This is The Rise Leader, signing off.